Hello, this is the sixth in the series of podcasts featuring two university registrars talking about higher education stuff. In this episode, Dave Hall, formerly of Leicester University, now at the Open University, and Paul Greatrix at the University of Nottingham, talk about the different elements of the highest level of university governance. Goings on at the governing body are largely unseen by many within universities, and there is a real need to ensure that governing body members understand the university better and are more visible to staff. The importance of drawing the line between governance and management, as well as getting the core elements of business operations right, are explored, along with the need for the involvement of students and staff in the big decisions. Unsurprisingly, perhaps, the vital role of the registrar as secretary to the governing body is emphasised, as is the need for them to support both the chair and the vice-chancellor in ensuring effective governance. There's also plenty of discussion about the role of the vice-chancellor and a defining governance moment in the history of the University of Nottingham. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to another edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff, in which I have a chat with Dave Hall, who's registrar at the University of Leicester at time of recording, and shortly to take up the role of registrar at the Open University. And Dave, one of the things I was very, very keen to talk about is governance, because governance in universities, and when I'm talking about governance, I mean the top level governance within the university, so matters pertaining to the governing body and its oversight of university operations. Because one of the challenges, it seems to me, is definition. Yeah, lots of people talk about governance without really defining what they mean, and often when people talk about governance, they're simply talking about committee work or stuff that happens in meetings, and that seems to me terribly imprecise and very vague. So top level governance within universities, I've always thought it's one of the most important yet under researched and under investigated, indeed under discussed, areas in higher education, and that's partly because so few people witness it. Most of the people who see what happens at governing bodies are just the members, and people like you and me tend to be secretaries to the governing bodies, and not many other people. And most of them are from outside the sector and or outside the university, and don't participate in discussions about university life other than in the university of which they're a governor. So I wonder what you thought about the importance of governance, because it seems to me, you know, it is important. It enables or rather ensures that, you know, universities run their affairs properly. There's a whole bunch of responsibilities on governors and governing bodies, and when it goes wrong, it can have really far-reaching consequences for the institution, as we've seen around the country in recent years, where there have been governance problems at a number of universities. What do you think?
I think that one challenge when thinking about the governing body is that, as you say, I guess a lot of staff, certainly students, won't know who they are. And so how much should we do to ensure that staff do know who the governing body is, and certainly who the chair of council is, the chair of the governing body, because they are the vice-chancellor's boss. And in terms of then developing that group of people so that they know enough about higher education, enough about their university, enough about the culture and the values, and they know enough fast enough to be able to play a constructive role in terms of the long-term strategic direction and stewardship of the institution. And that's a constant challenge. I know that previous chairs of council have said to me, you know, it takes 3 or 4 years to even get to understand how the university works, because there are many aspects of it which are very different from the world of business, and quite rightly so. So I think it would be best, or better, I think, if council members or governing body members were more visible to staff. But then you don't want them to become the managers. And that's the, you know, drawing the line between the responsibility of the of the paid executive, people like the Vice Chancellor and ourselves and the Pro Vice Chancellors, other members of an executive team who are being paid to take responsibility, and then the governing body, in vast majority of universities, I think all but maybe a handful are unpaid.
Yeah.
They're volunteers. And they have some, a chair of council will put in maybe 1-2 days a month and often be dealing with some quite tricky issues. And as you say, stewarding in many cases a multi-million pound, maybe £1 billion organisation is a significant challenge and responsibility. And that is has been an issue for the sector now for donkey's years. And there are a number of, over the years, been high-profile governance failures where institutions of or individuals, vice-chancellors, for example, have maybe acted inappropriately, not in accordance with the values of an institution. And there's questions asked about why it wasn't dealt with quicker or sooner. And when those happen, the rest of the sector gets tarred with that brush.
Indeed. I think that's absolutely right. But part of it, therefore, it seems to me, is getting the nuts and bolts right around ensuring that the things that the governing body needs, you know, are actually happening, so that you do ensure that you've got, you know, proper business-like committee activity. So that all the, well, we've talked about this before, the importance of getting, you know, the minutes and agenda and papers right, so that actually it is clear to everyone involved that these, you know, things are working and working effectively, and proper decisions are being taken and recorded within the authorities set out under the university's charter and statutes, you know, so that actually everything's happening in accordance with the rules. And some of those rules are, you know, university rules. Some of them are laid down by the Office of Students, some of them by Parliament. And, you know, it's really important that those things are followed. It often seems really, really dull to people who want to have, you know, kind of buccaneering discussions about university expansion or whatever, and, you know, new buildings and new acquisitions and, you know, loans and bonds and all the rest of it. But actually, you've got to get the fundamentals right in order to enable councils, governing bodies, to discuss the big strategic things that they do need to discuss. But it can feel very mundane at times. And I think that, you know, that does seem rather off-putting to some governing body members. But it's really important.
They have to be able, or I think it's useful where governing body members are able to sort of dipstick feelings within the institution, just to see how it's going from the front line, if you like, and it's good where staff have got relationships with academic staff in particular, but are able to see students, and that they have a freedom to move around the institution without trying to become the executive. And I think that's an important role. That's why I don't think it's appropriate that governing body members turn up 5 times a year and you don't see them in the meantime. I know that they are not remunerated, but you can't understand the culture and the progress in an organisation if you are just turning up for a 2 or 3 hour meeting.
Yeah.
You have to be able to talk to the staff. It's a critical thing, because the challenge that we have as the administration and as registrars is where a decision is taken. If someone is to ask by what authority was that decision taken, and on the basis of what evidence and information, it's our job to have ensured that there's an appropriate trail of evidence and material that says this was a legitimate decision, that this investment, this taking out this loan, this the construction, or whatever it was, is it appropriate for the long-term health and stability of the institution.
And exactly right. And bearing in mind that those external people, who will be in a majority, because apart from a couple of universities, you know, majority external members is required. They, on the whole, will have no direct experience of higher education other than perhaps their own experiences as undergraduates, which may, in some cases, be many, many, many years ago and, you know, quite different from how it is now. So, I mean, I do think that they therefore, as you say, have to get a sense of what life is like within the university. They also have to listen to the voices on the governing body from the academic community, who are there. They may be elected, they may be appointed, but nevertheless they are members of the academic staff, usually, not always, who are able to convey some of that experience. And particularly when they're making decisions around investments in teaching and research, they have to acknowledge the expertise of the university members in the room, who are, you know, much more in tune and aware of the key issues. You know, you can't simply decide a research investment isn't appropriate because it doesn't look like it's going to give you a payback within a reasonable period of time. University research isn't like that. So I do think you're right, the getting under the skin of the institution is really important, but it is quite hard to do, because it is, if you just go and sit in a cafe for half an hour, you won't really get an impression. Well, you might get some kind of impression, but you won't really grasp the essence of institutional life from that. You'll have to spend a bit more time mystery shopping, I think, but better to go to a departmental meeting in physics or wherever, to hear people talking passionately about their research activity, then that will give you an insight in a way that no paper or presentation at council can.
Yeah, the other challenge is how we balance or create through the governance process or retain rather a sense of democracy within the institution.
Democracy is an interesting word in the
which would horrify many colleagues. But I think it was I won't be able to quote it, but the VC at Oxford years ago, Colin Lucas, made the comment was something like, "How do we retain the support or the consensus of the academic community in particular, in the sense that they are involved in policy and decision making, while at the same time taking decisions and stewarding the institution in a way that delivers changes which are required by the changing environment?" And how do we get the balance between actually making changes and having some nod to consultation and consensus in achieving it?
Well, is it a nod, or is it real? Because I mean, I think his experience, Lucas's experience at Oxford, wasn't a terribly happy one in terms of trying to drive through some changes. And the structures there are such that actually, if the academic community doesn't want to do something, the academic community can stop something happening. So, which is rather different from most other institutions in terms of their governing structures. But I think the point though about the proper engagement and visibility of decision making to the academic community is really, really important. So that you should not be making a decision at a governing body without some prior involvement, at least, of relevant academic decision making structures, because you have to have that academic input in some form. But whether or not it's a kind of representative democratic structure is another matter altogether, isn't it?
Yeah, by democracy I do mean the engagement with the community in decision making at some point prior to the final decision being made. And a nod to it maybe sounded too cynical, although if I was being very cynical, I'd say you ask enough people their opinion and you can do what you like. because they are complicated organisations, and I wouldn't pretend to know everything, and therefore you absolutely have to ask the opinions and get the perspectives of other students and staff, because they will add value to the final decision. And the problem, I think, in the university in particular, I don't know what you call it, iconoclastic leadership, the idea that you can know everything as a vice chancellor, is a deeply flawed perspective to take.
No, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, we refer to governance debacles in a number of institutions, and I think that some of those have been closely aligned with bold, thrusting vice chancellors who've wanted to make a difference and wanted to drag their institutions with them, and that's where things have also gone wrong.
I guess the most difficult time is when I start to talk about democracy, I think why you're picking me up is that you can't have a vote on everything.
Yeah.
You've got to take some decisions, and not every decision is going to be popular.
Yeah.
What I think colleagues or the community should expect is they know why the decision is being taken on what basis.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a minimum. There are times, maybe not that often, when an organisation, I think, does have to go to the Senate and ask for their perspective, and you may end up with a vote. And there, the executive has to be cautious about either being prepared to live with the answer it didn't want, or to resign as a result. But it's very, very rare, but those circumstances ought to be able to arise in an organisation, as opposed to whether they should regularly arise.
I think that's right. There was a defining moment in the history of the University of Nottingham when, early into Colin Campbell's vice-chancellorship, he became vice-chancellor in 1988 and then, you know, continued for nearly 20 years thereafter. But he, early on, he was introducing a whole series of changes, and he was the kind of youngest vice-chancellor in the country at the time, and it felt like a real departure, I think, for the University of Nottingham. I should stress, this is long before I arrived, right? But at that time, there was a body called Court, which was a kind of, it was a body of the, you know, the great and the good from across the county, as well as within the institution, and emeritus professors, etc., many of whom were unhappy with the changes that Colin Campbell was introducing, and sought to press a vote on a couple of occasions at Court in order to get him to take responsibility for a particular incident which had happened, which had sadly resulted in a member of staff, academic staff, taking their own life, and sought to hold him responsible for that, which he wasn't and couldn't have been, but nevertheless it was an absolute cause célèbre at the time. But it went to a vote, and it was a close vote. And had the vote gone the other way, then he was in a radical change vice-chancellor, but I absolutely expect that, you know, he was also a kind of very honourable individual, and he would have, I'm sure, felt that he had no choice but to resign had the vote gone the other way. Fortunately, it didn't, and he went on to be a very successful and, you know, really transformative vice-chancellor who essentially made this institution what it is today. But had that one vote gone a different way, then the history of the institution would have been potentially very, very different. And I that's always struck me as, you know, quite a remarkable thing, really, and salutary.
I think if I've picked up anything over too long in this business, is that what seems to matter more than anything, and it's been evident recently with the strikes, is what colleagues want to feel is that their leader, their vice-chancellor, cares about them. I think that's what they want to see. And you can get you can go a long way if the sense within the community is that the leadership cares. And that doesn't always mean that you're going to take decisions which everybody's going to be comfortable with, but that your heart's in the right place, if you like. And I've certainly seen vice-chancellors where that's definitely the case, and those where maybe it wasn't the case, or it was perceived not to be, and they have struggled as a result of that. And I think that can get you along. If it's genuine, it has to be really felt that you... Because a vice-chancellor is the institution. Yeah. You don't get to pretend it's somebody else's problem. You don't get to talk in a third person about it. It is you, and they're very powerful individuals. Hence, you need, as we've been discussing, a good governance structure around it to ensure that all that authority isn't misused, and that somebody like a registrar or even a chair of council is the famous Roman slave stood on the chariot whispering, "You're not a god in their ear."
Well, I mean, that's part of the role, obviously, but, we've discussed before the many dimensions of the registrar's role, but, that is, yes, I suppose, one dimension of it. But I think you're absolutely right, and I mean, I think the character of vice-chancellors has changed over the years. I mean, they moved from being the kind of... being very much the kind of chair and facilitator into being, you know, a much more, you know, heroic, autocratic, you know, in many cases quite macho leadership style, which has, you know, from my view, completely disappeared as any kind of, you know, approach that anyone wants to take. To be much more, you know, empathetic and engaged and in touch leadership. And I think you're absolutely right. And so the you know, the kind of delusions of grandeur and the godlike status is something that I think is much less common now, certainly in the kind of, you know, more recent generation of appointees, I would say. And I just think that's got to be for the good, hasn't it? It's got to be better for institutions.
Yeah, and it's good. I think some of that comes with more women taking on roles as vice-chancellor now than have in the past. I think some of the challenges come out of the culture within academia itself, the perceived greatness of the professor, if you like,
yeah,
in certainly in some disciplines, that hierarchical nature of academia can support a more dictatorial vice-chancellor approach. But communities we've become, thankfully, more diverse, and you can't just tell people what to do.
Yeah.
Because as a student said to me, they don't bloody listen.
Indeed. I mean, the interesting thing is that, I mean, vice-chancellors are overwhelmingly drawn from the academy, right? We know that. But what is interesting as well is that because the opportunities to be on the governing body are very, very limited, you will quite often get vice-chancellors who are appointed who've actually not had any direct experience of governance within the institution. And I think that puts them at a real disadvantage, because they've got to learn that really, really quickly. But it also underlines the importance of having the registrar there as your supporter and your sidekick, who enables you to operate within that environment and is able to support and advise helpfully. And I think where the challenges really arise for a vice-chancellor is where there isn't someone in the registrar or COO role or secretary role who, you know, is able to offer them that support, because then they haven't got anyone who's able to give them that advice and input. Because, you know, the relationship with the chair is a different one. As you said earlier, they're their boss. They're the one, you know, appraising them and deciding how much they're going to be paid every year. And whether or not they should remain in the role, whether their contract's going to be extended. That's a very, very different relationship.
You're right, and I think it's something I've had to say in the past, I won't say to whom, that the council or the governing body is not the enemy. You know, they're not the enemy within, trying to undermine the authority of the vice-chancellor. They are, at worst, well-wishers, and at best can provide a constructive challenge and support for institution and bring their experience from the outside world and from other organisations into a university. And you can sometimes see that they're being held at arm's length, yeah, as if they're not to be engaged with. And I think, as you say, the role of the registrar is to, this sounds a bit, I don't know, pretentious or arrogant, but to be the conscience of the, you know, you've got to try and get the balance right between working with a chair of council and working with a vice-chancellor, both of whom are your boss, to try and ensure that it, as you say, functions effectively from an operational perspective, but it functions effectively from a relationship perspective as well. Also bearing in mind that, you know, registrars lose their jobs as well, so you've got to...
It is a difficult path, and I mean, I often see it as a kind of an inverted pyramid, with the registrar at the apex, at the bottom, and the vice chancellor and the chair of council, you know, pulling the top corners, and if one of those corners is problematic, then you can survive. If two of them are problematic, then you've got a real problem, and you know. And as you say, in those circumstances, it's likely that the registrar will be the one for the job. And it does happen, and it has happened around the sector, which is always very sad to see. But I think the other thing, just to conclude, is that getting governance right is really, really important. But one of the things governing bodies have to do is to appoint the Vice-Chancellor, and they have to get that decision right, and it's really important they take that incredibly seriously. Because no matter how brilliant the governance is, if they appoint the wrong Vice-Chancellor, they can't compensate for that, right? You can't, a great governing body will not sort out poor management in a university. It's not going to make things better in a way that, a really capable Vice-Chancellor, supported, of course, by a good registrar, can enable a university to flourish and to thrive. Great governance can't compensate for poor management.
And I don't think there are many... I don't know whether there are other sectors where one of the questions of the appointing panel of their chief executive would be, what evidence is that they can manage?
Indeed. Well, on that note, we'll leave it there. So thank you for an entertaining run around the thorny issue of university governance. Until next time then, Dave. Thank you. That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course. And if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until the next time.